listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, one of the last great private investigator shows from the golden age of radio. But first, on the lighter side, let's spend some time with Jack Benny. The Jack Benny program spanned some 23 years with tremendous success all along the way. Jack worried about his receding hairline, took inordinate pride in his blue eyes, fretted about advancing age, and never admitted to being older than 39. Benny's first appearance on radio was when columnist Ed Sullivan asked him to appear on a CBS interview program. His own show, premiering on NBC in May of 1932, was a solid hit. Mary Livingston, his wife, joined the program in the first 2 years. After auditioning other actresses for the part, Benny gave it to his wife. It was one of the best decisions he'd ever made. Eddie Anderson joined the program in 1937, and Don Wilson came on board as announcer by 1934. In 1949, CBS scored the greatest coup in broadcasting, luring Benny away from NBC in a deal involving some $2 million. Reruns continued until 1958. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with the Jack Benny program, broadcast from the Hillcrest Country Club sometime in the 1950s. Another classic radio moment from the archives of yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow notes, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent. Then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Bert and Marge, Amos and Andy.
Program starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Rochester, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. Ladies and gentlemen, the last few weeks, Jack Benny has been taking his golf game very seriously, playing every day. In fact, bright and early this morning, Jack and Rochester got in the car and started for the Hillcrest Country Club.
This is going to be a lovely day, Rochester. I can feel it.
Uh-huh.
You know, fall is the nicest season of the year.
Uh-huh.
And it's so invigorating early in the morning.
Uh-huh.
What'd you stop the car for?
I got to lift up the door. We ain't out of the garage yet.
Oh, yes. These Quonset huts are so long. Now, Rochester, go straight down Rexford and turn right on... No, turn left on Wilshire Boulevard. I don't want to pass Pico and Sepulveda.
Yes, sir.
You know, Rochester, fall is my favorite season. When the leaves start turning golden brown and the fragrant breeze wafts them gently to Mother Earth. And at the close of each day, as the sun sinks beyond the horizon, it seems like some elfin painter has gilded the sky and left it glowing with 100 brilliant colors. Ah, what fools men are, not to halt their breathless pace and admire the beauties of nature. Rochester, what are you stopping for now?
I gotta open the gateway and out of the driveway.
Oh, yes. I better hurry, Rochester. I'm supposed to meet... What are you looking at?
There's smoke coming out of the exhaust pipe.
Huh? Let me see. Oh, that's just a little smoke.
A little? If we could get this thing off the ground, we could do sky riding.
Oh, it's all right. Come on, let's get going. You know, I'm supposed to meet Phil Harris at the golf club at 10:30. Oh, boy, I can hardly wait till I get out on that course. The way I've been playing lately, I bet I'll... Oh, Rochester. Rochester, pull over to the curb and slow down. Oh, miss. Oh, miss. Going down Wilshire, miss? Drive on, Rochester.
Give up, do you, boy?
Rochester, I merely wanted to give her a lift. You know, it never hurts to be kindly and lend a helping hand to those less fortunate who haven't got a car. Someday the tables may be turned and I
might... Down Wilshire, mister?
Get lost. The tables may be turned. It might be me who's in the same spot. I wonder why that girl wouldn't... Could understand it if I wasn't good looking or something.
Maybe it's the car, boss. Why don't you trade in for a newer model?
What for? This car always takes us where we want to go.
I know, but look how much older we are when we get there.
What's the difference? That's the trouble, Rochester. Everybody's in a hurry. Everybody's rushing through life. They don't stop to enjoy the beauties of nature. Like now, it's fall. The leaves are turning golden brown. And the fragrant breeze wafts them gently from Mother Earth. And the close of each day as the sun sinks beyond the horizon. It seems like some elfin painter has gilded the sky and left it glowing with a hundred...
Boss! Stop! You're upsetting the motor!
I guess you're right. And Rochester, drive more in the middle of the street. The falling leaves are denting the fenders. Maybe I will trade this in. Oh, Rochester. Rochester. Pull over to the curb again.
It's the same girl, boss. We ain't past her yet.
I don't mean her. The one on the corner. Going down Wilshire, honey?
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Benny.
What? Dennis, what's the idea of wearing a green dress?
Oh, I'm not wearing a green dress. I'm standing behind a mailbox.
Mailbox?
You better wear your glasses, boss. Last week you almost picked up the sunset bus.
Yeah. I thought she was winking at me, but it was the taillight. Hop in, Dennis.
Okay, thanks.
Dennis, would you like to come along with me? I'm going to Hillcrest to play golf with Phil.
Oh, that's where I was going, and Phil Harris promised to caddy for me again.
Phil Harris caddies for you?
Yeah, and he makes it so easy for me to play the game. All I have to do is carry the bag, tee up the ball, and Phil hits it for me.
Dennis.
If he doesn't start hitting them better, I'm going to get a new caddy.
Dennis. Dennis. Boy. Look at me.
Huh?
Let me explain something to you. When you carried the bag, Phil wasn't caddying for you. You were caddying for him.
I was?
Certainly.
Gee, how I ever got two shows, I'll never know.
It's amazing. Rochester, turn on the radio.
We ain't got no radio.
Then sing something, will you, Dennis? I can't stand any more of that talk.
Okay.
To the tables down at Maury's, to the place where Louis dwells, to the dear old temple bar we love so well. Sing the whipping folks assembled with their glasses raised on high, and the magic of their singing casts its spell. Of their singing, of the songs we love so well. Shall I wasting and mavourneen and the rest? We will serenade our Louis while I sheep who have gone astray.
Here, Rochester, and I'll meet you on the first tee. I'm having lunch with Miss Livingston. See you later, Dennis. Dum dee da dum bum, da dee da da dum, da 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 dum bum dee dum.
Hello, Mr. Benny.
Hello. Just Molly and me and Fibber McGee. We're happy with our new Hooper. La 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 la. A turn to the right, and Harris is tight. Yeah, I wonder where Mary's sitting.
Hello, Jack.
Oh, hello, Mary. I thought you were going to be alone.
What?
Who are your friends?
Those are my golf clubs. Put on your glasses.
Oh, I wondered what they were all doing on one chair. The Niblick looks like Abe Blastvogel. Mary... Mary, do you order something to eat?
Yes, and I ordered a sandwich for you, too.
Good, good. You know, I can hardly wait to get out of that golf course. I'm playing Phil today.
Oh, Jack, you shouldn't play against Phil. He's too good for you.
What are you talking about?
You know what I'm talking about. Look how George Burns beat you yesterday.
Well?
And the day before that, you took a trimming from Cagney.
All right, Cagney, so I was off my game. What about last week when I played O'Brien?
But, Jack, you're so much bigger than she is.
Well?
When she sunk that 20-foot putt, you got so mad you kicked her doll in the sand trap.
It wouldn't be mad. Every time I got ready to drive, the doll would go, Mama, Mama. What tricks those kids use. And for 10 cents a hole. You'd think that... Oh, Mary, there's Lou Clayton and Artie Stebbins. Gee, they're great golfers. They hit the ball almost every time they swing at it. And Mary, look, there's Norman Krasner over there.
Norman Krasner?
Yeah, he's the fellow that loved that joke I told last year. You know, the one about like a moose needs a hat rack. Oh, he was crazy about it.
He was?
Yeah, watch this. Hey, Norman, like a moose needs a hat rack. You see? Every time I mention it, he goes crazy. I never saw anything like it. Hey, there's Don Wilson sitting at the next table there.
Where?
Right over there.
Oh, waiter, will you take my order, please?
Yes, sir. What do you have, Mr. Wilson?
Let's see. I'll start out with a bowl of oxtail soup and a combination salad. Oh, a nice thick sirloin steak and mashed potatoes, some string beans, some carrots, and a side order of spinach, a little cauliflower, and some hot rolls and coffee.
Yes, sir. Any dessert?
I don't know. What kind of pie have you got?
Apple, blueberry, peach, custard, raisin, and pineapple.
Good, I'll have them.
Yes, sir.
Did you hear that, Mary? How can Don digest all that food?
Well, don't you remember, Jack, last summer he was operated on?
Yeah, what did they take out?
Nothing. They put in a deep freeze.
Hey, that's pretty good, Mary. Deep freeze. Hey, Norman, did you hear that?
Oh,
racket. Well, I better get going in that locker room and put... Oh, Mary. Mary, there's George Fazio. He's the pro out here at Hillcrest. Remember last year he won the Canadian Open?
Oh, yes.
And, Mary, I've been taking lessons from him, and what he's done for my golf game is simply wonderful. Oh, George! George, come here a minute, will you? Hiya, George.
Hello, Jack.
George, I was just telling Mary how much you've helped my game.
I'm glad I have, Jack, and thanks for the check.
Oh, that's quite all right, George. It was money well spent. You know, I'm going to play Phil today.
Phil Harris?
Yes.
Well, do you think you can keep him interested in the game?
What do you mean?
The last time I played with him, I had to paint the ball green and put a pimento in it.
Oh.
I bet he didn't have the heart to hit it.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to meet him in the locker room. Oh, boy, I can't wait to get him out of that course.
Do you remember all the things I've taught you, Jack?
Oh, sure, George.
Well, let's find out. Your stance?
Feet apart.
Your grip?
Interlocking.
Your age?
38. Well, I got to run along now. So long, George.
So long, Jack.
Mary. Mary, I'm going into the locker room and get dressed. If you want to watch us play, I'll see you on the first tee.
Okay, Jack.
Hey, oh, Jack, where are you going?
I'm going to the locker room to meet Phil.
Oh, now, wait a minute, Jack.
Hey, Sidney. Sidney, where's Phil? Well, he'll probably be here in a minute. Well, get into my golf clothes, get these clothes off. A pretty girl is like a melody. Da-da-dum-dee-dum-boo-dum. Da-da-da-dum-dee-dee. Da 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 dum dee da dee.
Hey, Jackson, stop parading on that bench. This ain't no runway.
Oh, hello, Phil. I'll be ready to play in a minute. Hand me my robe, will you?
Which one is yours?
The red one with the Royal Crown Cola on it. Thanks. Say, Phil, how about a little bet on the game? $10. You know, just to make it interesting.
$10? Okay, but you know, I haven't played for 3 months. I won't be able to hit the ball.
What's the difference, Phil? It's only $15. Come on.
Look, Jackson, I'm tired. I didn't sleep good last night. You know, that floor is awful hard.
Phil, you slept on the floor last night?
Yeah, it's the first time I ever missed the bed.
What?
You know, them single beds ain't easy to hit.
They are if they're standing still. Now, come on, let's go play. And, Phil, it's not my fault you haven't played golf in 3 months or that you didn't sleep well. Remember our bet, $20. What? Hi, Mary. Hello, Dennis. Sorry we kept you waiting.
Well, holy smoke, get along with those old-fashioned knickers.
These knickers are all right.
And that cap hanging over one ear. You look like Jackie Coogan and the Kid.
All right. Now, come on, let's play. You shoot first, Phil.
Okay.
Here's your driver, Phil.
Thanks, kid. Now stand back, everybody. Four.
Wow, look at that ball go.
Look at it go.
Look. 200 yards at the most. Can't understand it after the awful life he's led. Well, it's my turn now. Rochester, tee up my ball.
Yes, sir.
A little higher.
Higher? It looks like a lollipop now.
I guess it's all right. Well, here goes. Quiet, everybody. Four. And I fanned it.
That's one stroke.
Don't count out loud. I must have been standing too far away. There. That's better. Four. Darn it. Another fan. I guess I'm holding the club too tight. Well, I'll get it this time. Four. I fanned it again.
You ought to be cool now. Four, hit it.
How can I hit it with all these interruptions? Everybody yelling and screaming at me. I hear it goes. Four.
What are you fouring about?
There's some people standing down there on the green.
Well, you won't be there till Thanksgiving.
Yeah? Well, watch this. Four. Wow! What was that?
You broke a window in the clubhouse behind you.
Behind me? Norman, shut up! Gee, I can't get rid of that slice. Oh, well, I'll take a four on this hole. Come on, everybody, let's go. Remember our bet, Phil, $5.
$5? You said 30.
I said 15, you cheat. Now, come on. All right, stand back, everybody. It's my turn. Darn those birds. I wish they'd stop singing. They're throwing me off my game.
Maybe they don't know you're playing for money.
You can pipe down, too. A fine country club, anyway, with birds all around.
And trees and grass, it's awful.
Oh, keep still. Hey, what hole are we on? We just finished the 7. How do we stand, Mary?
There's just 1 point between you.
Good, good.
Phil has 28, you have 128.
Well, there are 2 more holes. I still got a chance. I don't like this club I'm using. Hand me my spoon, Rochester.
You broke it over my head. I'm on the last hole.
Oh, yes. And give me my brassy. This is the worst game I ever played. Thank heaven it's not for money.
Wait a minute.
Keep quiet. I'm going to shoot. All right, stand back, everybody. 4. God darn it. What's the matter with me? What did I do that was wrong, Mary?
You never should have left Waukegan.
I mean, what's wrong with my game? Rochester, you've seen me play better than this.
I have?
Yes. What am I doing that's wrong?
Are you right-handed?
Yes.
Are you using right-handed clubs?
Yes.
Well, that ain't it.
Dennis, when I want your advice, I'll ask for it.
Hey, Jack. Here comes Mr. Fazio, your golf teacher.
Oh, yeah. Well, Jack, how's your game going? I want my money back. That's how it's going. Fine teacher.
Oh, come on, Jack. Hit the ball. It'll be dark pretty soon.
Okay. Okay. 4. Where did it go? Where did it go? Where'd the ball go?
There it is, by your left foot.
Oh, yeah.
Congratulations. It was by your right foot when you started.
You don't have to get cute about it.
Pardon me, boys. Do you mind if I go through?
Why, no. No, lady. Go right ahead.
Gee, she's pretty old to be playing golf, isn't she?
She sure is. How old are you, lady?
83.
Well. Go right ahead. Let's see you hit the ball. Take it easy now.
4.
Well, I'll be done.
Easy. I'm on the green. Thanks, boys.
You're welcome.
Gee, 83 years old, and look at her hit that ball.
She isn't a day over 70. Well, I'm too upset. Let's finish the game tomorrow,
Phil. We're finishing it right now. Now, go ahead and shoot.
Okay. Now, quiet, everybody, while I make this shot. 4. Wow, look at that ball go.
Yeah, right in the woods. What a slice.
Oh. Well, come on, Rochester. Let's look for it.
Oh, Jack, you'll never find it.
I'll find it. Don't worry. I'll join you on the fairway. See you in a minute. Gosh, it's dark. That ball must be around here someplace. I wish I had a flashlight.
Why don't we go home, get a good night's sleep, and continue the hunt in the morning?
We're going to find that ball tonight.
That's what you said last night.
Last night? Have we been here 2 nights?
And 3 days.
Well, what's the difference, Rochester? It's fall. The leaves are turning golden brown. The fragrant breeze wafts them gently to Mother's Earth. And at the close of each day, and the sun sinks beyond the horizon, it seems like some elfin painter has gilded the sky and left it glowing with 100 rays. Well, I can see better now that the sun's coming up. The ball landed right here on this side of the bush. Or was it on the other side of the bush? No, I guess it was right here.
Say, boss, how would you like your eggs?
Scrambled soft.
Okay, I was lucky I found that bird's nest.
Yeah. Yeah.
How would you like your bacon?
Bacon? Where'd you get that?
I brought it with me. This happens every time.
Oh, yes. Now, let's see. If the ball hit this tree, it would have landed over by the bunker.
From sometime in the 1950s, there's the Jack Benny program live from the Hillcrest Country Club. In a moment, confidential investigator Barry Craig, as this edition of Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Barry Craig, confidential investigator, is one of the few detective radio programs that had separate versions of it broadcast from both West and East Coasts. NBC produced the program from its New York studios from 1951 to 1954, then moved it to Hollywood, where it aired from 54 to 1955. William Gargan, who also played the better-known television and radio detective Martin Kane, was the voice of New York private eye Barry Craig, while Ralph Bell portrayed his associate, Lieutenant Travis Rogers. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear with Barry Craig, confidential investigator, and The Long Way Home from July of 1952, another classic radio program from the audio vault of yesteryear.
William Gargan stars as Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
It's a sad fact, but very few murderers ever amount to anything. They're in such a killing profession, and when they come to the end of their rope, there's always a noose attached to it.
The National Broadcasting Company presents William Gargan in another transcribed drama of mystery and adventure with America's number one detective, Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
Barry Craig speaking. Ever noticed the fact that the work a man does leaves its mark on him? 9 times out of 10, you can spot a doctor, a lawyer, a butcher, a baker half a block away. I wonder what a confidential investigator looks like. He looks like me. I figured the above philosophy represented a good day's work. The shadows were creeping along Madison Avenue. I got out of the office. And I locked the door behind me. Maybe I could fool a burglar into thinking I had something worth stealing. I hoped I wasn't waking Jake. A night elevator man needs his sleep. Something was wrong. He'd started the elevator up almost before I'd finished pushing the buzzer. You could spoil tenants awful fast that way. Jake?
Hey.
You suffering from insomnia?
No.
You've been reading a book on how to get ahead in the world?
No.
Well, stop chattering and let's get started. Well, you got the door shut fine. Now we're supposed to go down.
Oh, glad you reminded me.
They didn't have any elevators down on your farm in Vermont.
No.
It figures.
No office buildings, neither.
That figures, too.
No shiny cars, no blondes.
What did you do during the long winter evenings?
Decided to leave the farm, Mr. Craig.
Well, right about now is when you open the elevator door.
Ain't sure I should.
Why?
Tent the farm.
Meaning, we've got elevators, office buildings, shiny cars, and, a blonde?
Yep.
I'm not afraid of blondes.
Back in Vermont, 'twas a pop usually carried the gun.
But here?
She's carrying it.
Must be a strain on her. Open up, Jay.
Yep.
Where'd you hide her?
The shiny car.
Outside?
That's the one.
Oh, I like them, that shape. Long, rounded, smooth.
You mean the car?
Oh, sure. As far as the blonde goes, there's not a wrinkle or a gun on her.
Her bag.
Oh.
I see it when she powdered her nose.
Well, maybe it's a trick cigarette case.
No.
She could be waiting for somebody else.
Nobody else in the building.
Then I'd better not keep her waiting. After all, you can only die once.
Once is enough.
Don't remind me. Besides, blondes rarely have any reason to shoot me.
Boasting?
Just being wistful. Good night, Jake.
Night, Mr. Gray.
Well, been waiting long?
Not very.
Beautiful night.
Isn't it?
The name's Craig.
I know.
Well, Jake could be wrong.
Who's Jake?
The nightman.
He wasn't wrong.
Then I get in?
Please.
Okay. Well, the name's still Craig.
I'm Mona Walsh.
Mrs. Walsh?
Mrs. Walsh.
How's Mr. Walsh?
That's why I was waiting for you.
We're going to see him?
I hope not.
I could think of an easy explanation. Mona Walsh had seen me, had been carried away by my rugged physique and my mildly scrambled features, and was now carrying me off to a tryst among the pines, or maybe the maples. It was too easy an explanation, and it didn't include the gun. We're going someplace or just cruising?
I'm trying to find words, the best way to tell you.
I've been a confidential investigator for quite a while. You don't have to find the best way.
My husband isn't Mr. Walsh. He's Ted Walsh.
Well, what difference is that? Wait a minute. Ted Walsh?
That's right. The Ted Walsh.
If I remember my newspaper headlines correctly, he's killed a few men here and there.
Yes.
His last little effort was robbing a bank someplace in Massachusetts.
And killing a guard.
And killing a guard. Nice guy.
I didn't know what he was when I married him. You probably won't believe that.
If you turn out to be a client of mine, I'll have to believe it.
It's true. I didn't know until just recently. When I found out, I left him. Came here to New York.
Fair enough. You're in the clear. What's bothering you?
Ted's in New York, too.
New York's a big place.
Ted's terribly in love with me. He came here for only one reason.
You could keep your door locked.
Oh, please don't joke.
I wasn't joking. Keep your door locked and your telephone handy. Police would be glad to remove him from your doorstep.
Ted would spot them. Then he'd know I told the police about him. He'd get away from them. He's done it before. He'd kill me.
Possible.
But if you watched for him, he wouldn't spot you. Then, as soon as he came, you carry a gun, don't you?
I've got a license, too.
Well, then everything would be all right, wouldn't it?
Might be. There'd be a fee.
I thought perhaps $500.
Oh, that's too high. I generally get 50 a day in expenses.
That doesn't seem enough.
I run a one-price shop.
Well, all right.
This your place?
Yes.
Well, let's get out. Small house. Stay there alone?
Yes.
I can see why you'd worry.
I feel nervous. It's exposed, standing around like...
Well, we'll try the house. I'd better go in with you.
Of course.
In case he's a little early.
Oh, I hadn't thought of it.
Don't get excited. I'm probably too careful. But we'll check anyway. Got your key?
Oh, here.
Over the side, huh?
What?
The lamppost out front throws some light. The house is dark. You'd make a nice target.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. So far, fine. Light switch near the door?
To the left, on the way inside.
Okay, stay where you are. Clear enough. Come on in. Got a latch on it? Uh-huh, good. Rest of the house now. I feel like a termite inspector, except termites don't kill, do they? Mr. Walsh was not at home. Mrs. Walsh felt good about it. I didn't have time to get philosophical about marriage. I checked the back of the house for good measure. The high fence took care of the garden and the back door. It was only the front door to worry about. You're alone in the house, Mrs. Walsh.
Yes.
When I shut this door behind me, you'll lock it.
Of course.
Then if your husband comes calling...
I'll be safe.
You won't have to use that gun you're carrying around anyway.
You'll be out front, someplace?
Yeah. The nearest convenient doorway. I'll find one. It's one of the things you learn fast in my business. How to find convenient doorways. So long, Mrs. Walsh.
So long.
There was a small nightlight over the door. That was nice. It would light up Mr. Walsh neatly if he visited. I had my choice of two or three doorways from which I could watch the Walsh house and be close enough to have a clean shot at Ted Walsh. I passed them all up. I was looking for a phone, and I found one in a drugstore half a block away.
Lieutenant Rogers, homicide.
Harry Craig here.
A move tonight, eh?
Watch those college words. People will think you're educated.
I am.
Tonight you're not ashamed of being a college graduate, Lieutenant?
I'm all alone in the office. Nobody will ever find out.
I'll tell them, Trav. No blackmail. I want some information, though. You might have it.
You flatter the department.
It's about Ted Walsh.
Walsh? We'd like some information about him, too. For example, where to get in touch with him.
I haven't got it. Trav, on that bank job he pulled in Massachusetts, was it a solo flight?
A bank job's never solo. Especially one involving $60,000.
But Walsh was definitely in on it.
So definitely, he killed a guard.
Thanks, Trav.
Hey, wait a minute. My curiosity's aroused.
Try a cold shower. Good night, Fran. That, for what it was worth, was that. I went back to Mrs. Walsh's little gray home in the West. It looked the same. I pushed the button.
Who is it?
Mary Craig. Leave the door on the chain, but open it a crack, huh?
All right. What's the matter?
I have decided to throw up the job.
What?
Yeah, I'm resigning.
But I don't understand.
It's a clear saving of $50 for you.
Well, why are you...
Let's say the hours are too long, huh? Good night, Mrs. Walsh. She was saying something as I went down the walk and away from the house. I didn't bother listening. I had to drop her. You see, I always believe a client, and Mona Walsh, however beautiful, was a liar. But however much of a liar she was, Mona Walsh was beautiful. So I hung around in one of those convenient doorways. With me apparently off the job, she'd need somebody else to keep Ted Walsh away from her. There wasn't much time left either. She wouldn't take a chance trying to find another gullible private detective. I was interested in who she would find. It took maybe a half hour for my replacement to show up. He was an anti-doorway boy. He picked an alley. I thought he looked lonely, so I dropped in on him. Hello?
What? Hey, who?
The name's Craig, Barry Craig.
What do you want?
I'm trying to find out what's special about this alley.
Nothing. I'm crazy about alleys, that's all.
You're sticking to that?
Sure.
Then...
Oh,
thought you'd be packing one.
What? You ain't got no right taking a guy's gun.
I'm a lot bigger than you are. Would you like to argue about it?
Well, there's a dame in that house. Ted Walsh's wife. She's kind of worried he might show.
She doesn't love him anymore?
Oh, I wouldn't know nothing about that. The orders was he don't get to her.
What does he get? Never mind. Who's got all the big concern for Mona Walsh?
Oh, why don't you leave me alone? What's your angle?
Maybe I want to send your boss flowers because he's humanitarian. Feed me a name.
I didn't tell you nothing, understand?
Of course.
It's, Mr. Harold.
Harold?
Yeah, but remember, you didn't get it from me.
I'll remember. Here's your gun.
Oh, yeah.
I'm worried about Mona Walsh, too.
Oh, you don't have to worry about her. Nobody will get the jump on me again.
I hope not. So long.
Hey,
start with the kid stuff. Snatch and run. Knock over a couple of small stores. Move up into the hot cars and cold decks. Go on to delivering boats a few seasons. Take over a few wheels. Buy a few deaths, and you wind up being Mr. Harold. But by then, you wear tailored suits and handmade shoes.
Now, what's the idea this hour?
Your name's Craig.
Craig. I've seen the face around. Wait a minute now. You a private eye?
Call it confidential investigator. Makes it seem more dignified.
Yeah, I'll call it what you want, but get out of here.
Not until I see Harold.
Let's make it Mr. Harold, huh? And he ain't seeing you. Ain't the type that appeals to him.
He's seeing me.
You pushing your luck or something? When I say you don't see Mr. Harold, you don't see him.
So far, it's only your word.
It's more than a word.
Everybody's got one. Yours licensed?
No, you care. Keep pushing and you're a trespasser.
Logan?
Yeah, Mr. Harold.
What's the trouble?
Yeah, I'm having words with a private eye who wants in.
Oh, indeed. Let him in, Bogan. I haven't seen one in years.
Okay.
Who knows? He may want to have his license renewed.
Not exactly. The name's Craig.
Bogan, put that gun away and leave us, hmm?
Okay, Mr. Harold.
Bogan is so impulsive.
A little crude, too, or haven't you noticed?
He doesn't polish easily.
It's getting late. What's half of $60,000, Harold?
$30,000.
That kind of money worth a debt?
I haven't seen the latest quotations.
Ted Walsh knocked over a bank a couple of weeks ago, killed a guard and collected $60,000.
An enterprising young man.
He had a little help. The way I figure, it was $30,000 for Ted, $30,000 for the help.
Seems equitable enough, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, but Harold, how do you share the debt? Harold needed a little time. I let him have it. The room was nice. Good furniture, oak paneling on the walls. Small Renoir hung just where the light would hit it in the mornings. A girl brushing her hair before a mirror. She looked like someone I'd seen, and for a minute I couldn't remember where. She looked like the girl who'd married Ted Walsh.
You must have some interest in the rather sordid subject of Ted Walsh and his peccadilloes. Why?
Mona Walsh. She tried to hire me.
She's a lovely girl. You wouldn't hire?
She lied to me.
Sad.
She wanted me to protect her against her husband. She'd heard he was here in New York. She didn't tell me who told her. Why?
I really couldn't say.
She wanted me to stake out in front of her house. So when Walsh got there, I'd take him. But Harold, how would Ted Walsh have found her house? She wouldn't have told him, not if she was really afraid of him.
Isn't all this Mona Walsh's problem?
No, Ted Walsh alive gets half of the $60,000. Ted Walsh dead gets a mouthful of dust in Potter's Field.
How picturesque.
The problem is, how to kill Ted Walsh without annoying the police. The answer is, hire a private detective, let Ted Walsh know where his lovely wife is, and he heads for her. The private detective kills him. All nice and legal.
I suppose it would be.
Harold, you picked me to kill Ted Walsh for you.
You're ruining my tie.
Sorry, I have trouble with my temper sometimes. I don't like being a hired gun, Harold.
You turned the job down, didn't you? What more do you want?
I don't know. Maybe I'm worried because the liar is so lovely. I got out of there. I could have gone to lots of other places after that, but I didn't. I went back to my office and sat. I didn't have any doubts. Harold had set up Mona Walsh as a decoy. When I cried quits, one of his men moved in to protect her. Harold wanted Ted Walsh dead so he could hold on to all of the $60,000. And maybe Mona Walsh, too. It was an idea I didn't enjoy. I stopped having it. I was waiting without knowing what I was waiting for. I thought it might be nice if I had a Renoir to hang next to the dusty license on the wall. Then I thought of the people and the motives that kept me in business. I decided the Renoir wouldn't fit. The hours dragged by and I stopped kidding myself. Nobody phoned. Nobody would phone. I'd get up and go home and go to sleep. I got up, but I didn't go home. street in front of Mona Walsh's house was empty and cold. The lights in Mona Walsh's house were out. And the boy in the alley wasn't there anymore. I was wrong. I hadn't gone deep enough. The alley closed in on me, and then I found him. He was propped up against the wall, his legs straight out before him, his head slumped down over his chest. He might have been brooding about the blood that had poured out of that chest if he hadn't been so completely dead. I left him there, he'd keep. He'd been dead some little while. Somebody had shot him. I got past him into Mona Walsh's house. The lock on Mona Walsh's front door was in fine shape, except that the door wasn't locked. The living room was the way I'd remembered it. I went into the bedroom. She had fallen back across the bed. The stain on the front of her dress hadn't been her dressmaker's idea.
Hello?
Mrs. Walsh.
I hope maybe I'd see you again.
Hold it. Emergency. An ambulance. 435 Ash. Gunshot wound, and make it quick. Yeah.
Mr. Craig?
Better not talk.
Why?
There'll be a doctor here in a couple of minutes.
You've seen people like this before. I should be dead.
Will you stop talking?
No, I won't. What do you want me to do? Think about what my life has been. Shouldn't have married Ted. He's bad.
Now you don't have to.
I'm not making excuses. Only things happen. You lie about them, even to yourself. Now I don't have to lie anymore.
Once the doctor gets here, you...
Oh, please. It's all going so fast now. Kiss me. Good night.
Hi.
When I was a little girl, my father always... Please.
Sure.
Thanks.
Good night. The doctor was a little late. The police arrived and made noises and were very busy. Mona Walsh didn't pay any attention to any of them.
Barry?
Yes, Lieutenant.
We haven't been able to get a thing. A couple of the neighbors heard the shots but thought they were a car backfiring.
That happens.
Which gives us the time Mrs. Walsh and the character in the alley were killed. 1 hour and 10 minutes ago.
Does knowing that make you feel any better?
With all the deaths you've seen, Barry, you ought to be a little more callous about new ones.
Maybe I don't try hard enough.
Stay the way you are. It's better. Otherwise, you lose humanity. None of us can afford that.
They teach you that in college?
It's not taught anywhere. It's something you either know or don't know. Our policeman isn't supposed to give lectures, though, so... Ted Walsh is out in the open now. He must have holed up for the last couple of weeks, but... We know he's in New York now. We'll get him.
Yeah. Mind if I get out now?
No. Where are you going? We could kill a few bears after I'm through here.
Thanks, but not tonight, Sram. Because, you see, I won't be through for maybe longer than that. I wasn't holding out on Trav. I had to be sure. There was only one place I could think of that might help. If I were Ted Walsh, I'd go visit Harold. I wasn't Ted Walsh, but I went to visit him anyway. I always enjoyed driving. It was a nice night for it. The only thing wrong was a red stain on a girl's dress. There was a car parked outside Harold's house. It started pulling away as I came up. I didn't try to figure out anything subtle. I just cut my wheel right into it. Both cars stopped quick. I was out of mine before Bogan could quite make it. But he made it out of his car. Hello, Bogan.
Why don't you watch where you're driving?
Me. Oh, you don't want the gun, but I do.
Why, you bitch.
You'll wait the neighbors. Thanks for the gun.
Yeah.
Hey, warm. And it's been fired. within very recent history.
Now, listen.
Let's see if there's anything else in your car, huh? No. Nothing that moves. Bogan?
Yeah.
I can't take the time to deliver you. I'll have to put you on deposit for a little while. Keep. I thought Mr. Harrell might still be at home. Worrying about his car, maybe.
Bogan, what?
Oh, Craig. We'll go inside.
Now, look here.
I've got Bogan's gun.
All right. What do you want?
Your car's in a bad way.
That crash?
Yeah, I'm a careless driver.
Was Bogan hurt?
He'll live.
I'm going to call for a doctor for him.
No.
Now, look here. This is perfectly...
You're nervous.
I haven't anything further to say to you, Craig.
One man's opinion, yours. I don't share it.
You must have looked into the car.
I did.
Well, that can be explained easily.
Explain it easily.
You saw Ted Walsh's body in the back of the car. He was a killer. He apparently thought his wife and I had been a little too friendly.
Had you?
Well, you know how it is, Craig.
I don't know.
Well, anyway, he came here. Threatened to kill me, so... Well, Bogan beat him to it, that's all. It was a case of self-defense. It would stand up in any court.
Sure.
Well, there's no reason to lose your head.
I haven't lost it. Where was Bogan delivering the body? To the aquarium?
Well, you see, Bogan's record isn't too good. He was afraid the police might not readily accept the plea of self-defense. He wanted to dispose of the body. I tried to dissuade him, but I failed. As a matter of fact, I was just about to notify the police myself.
Oh, I'm sure you were.
I think you'll find the bullets in Ted Walsh's body came from Bogan's gun.
I don't doubt it.
Well, then, that sort of leaves me out of it, doesn't it?
How about the bullets in the body of the boy you sent to guard Mona Walsh? How about the bullets in Mona Walsh's body?
They're dead?
They're dead.
Oh, that's terrible.
Sure.
Ted must have got to them. He had a gun. The bullets in those bodies would have come from his gun.
Don't you mean the gun you planted on him? Mr. Harold looked a little sick. His face matched the way I felt. For a minute, I wished I'd developed those calluses Trav mentioned. Then I forgot about it. The Herald retreated behind his desk.
Planted on him?
Ted Walsh came here before he went to visit his wife for his share of the bank money. Walsh died here. Bogan saw to that. But you still didn't own all of that $60,000. Mona Walsh might be considered to have a claim to half of it. So you decided to wipe out that claim.
You're dreaming.
You headed for a house. You had to take care of the boy in the alley. Walsh would have had to in order to get to Mona. You took care of him. Then you went into the house and entered the partnership between you and Mona Walsh.
No.
Yeah. You came back here, planted the gun you'd used on Ted Walsh. Bogan would dump his body where it wouldn't be found for a while. That way, no medical examiner could tell that Walsh had died before his wife.
That's very clever. You've got nothing to prove it with.
There's Ted Walsh's body. Examination now will show he died before Mona did.
A good lawyer could...
I've got something else. Something that told me Ted Walsh hadn't killed his wife before I even came here.
What's that?
An unlocked door.
I don't know what that means.
Mona Walsh's door was unlocked when I got to her house. The lock hadn't been tampered with, which meant Mona had opened that door. But she wouldn't have opened it to her husband. She was afraid of him. She'd have opened it for you, Harold. You've been fumbling in that desk drawer long enough. Bring the gun up. Maybe you'll beat me to the shot, huh?
I don't want to get involved.
You're involved. There's nothing left except maybe a chance to take me. Well? Okay, Harold. You're better, much better at killing women. Let's go tell some cops about it, huh?
You've been listening to William Gargan in another exciting transcribed mystery drama from the adventures of Barry Craig, confidential investigator. Tonight's story, The Long Way Home, was written by Lou Vittis.
From July of 1952, it's been Barry Craig, confidential investigator with The Long Way Home. That's all the time we have for today, but join us again next week at this same time and invite a friend to listen. Enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those fabulous days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long. Radio.
radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. The comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show. It's radio. I miss you, sodio, volio, dodio, do.
Preceding program copyright Edgewater Productions, all rights reserved.